much like ours, but with a greater intelligence, greater powers, and a greater capacity for good.
Even though you've been raised as a human being, you are not one of them.
Many people, I should say, get a Sunday newspaper, and there's something called the Parade Magazine Sunday Supplement, which is, has tens of millions of readers every week. The January 15th, 2006 edition, the cover story is, quote-unquote, how many planets are there? Hint, it's not nine. So NASA had announced in August of 2005 the discovery of the 10th planet. Now, what they're calling the 10th planet, what those of us who research this believe to be the 10th planet, are two different things. But NASA, once again, has to be out front, has to control the high ground on this issue. They will continue to keep the high ground. I have no doubt whatsoever, because they've got control of the media and we don't.
Our government, or governments friendly to the United States, control access to every observatory substantial in size and power enough to be able to see these things that might be coming from a distance, indicating, of course, the clampdown on panic. What much sense does it make, in the event of massive global flooding, to build an underground shelter?
When did we see hurricanes that were bigger than the state of Texas? And one after another, after another, after another. We're seeing fireballs coming from the sky, and NASA's recording them for us. During that time of the great floods, that the Hopi people and other people, not just the Hopi, but other people were brought to the inner Earth, which we call Hollow Earth, or Middle Earth, and they were brought there for a period of 480 years to survive the devastation that was happening here in the surface world.
There is an object right now moving into our solar system, and this information is being kept from the public. There's an indication that we have from many factors. I've watched comets coming in from the southern region of the solar system, hitting the sun, causing tremendous solar flaring, and the indication from all that we're seeing is that there is a big object moving into the solar system from the south. The point is that we know for a fact, from observing other incidents, that the astronomy community is not going to tell you about impending disaster. In fact, they're under direct orders not to tell you. We know there's tremendous equipment that has the ability to observe this object. In fact, an entire entourage of objects coming into our solar system.
You know, people were suspicious with George W. Bush's purchase of land, down south. It was, a lot of people thought, well, you know, he's doing it to escape war crimes charges. Well, you know, the powers that be are not going to, attack any of their own. They might, you know, go ahead and assassinate them if it serves their purpose. But I think George Bush is going to get a pat on the back. But he's got this territory now that has the largest source of fresh water available. It's got certainly a lot of mountainous terrain and a lot of protection from winds and things like that. It's very high above sea level and relatively close to oil fields and things like that. I think that all that has to be factored into this as well.
These are two books, both published by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. The, both these books discuss the new coastlines of the United States and North America and the vast areas of where tens of millions of people live being underwater. It'll be the first hard copy I've got my hands on. Everything has been word of mouth by Navy veterans who were at the classified briefings. This will be my first opportunity to have hard copy from the government itself.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day, coming to you on the Orion Talk Radio Network. It's Saturday night, May 1st, 2010. We have on the line John DiNardo, and thank goodness he's got some time to talk here tonight. These one-hour shows, they just go by way too quick. Anyway, we're going to bring John back on. So if you will, John, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Sheldon. There is so much evidence. One area of evidence is the government's knowledge of Planet X, the existence of it, the approach of Planet X. Dr. Robert S. Harrington, the chief astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., way back in the early 1990s, had sighted Planet X. He had done calculations based on the calculations of many astronomers going back to 200 years, in fact, throughout the entire astronomy and astrometric community. They had been noticing perturbations in the outer planets. We've gone over this before. That is, at a point in the outer planet's orbital path, at a particular point, the planet would be plucked out of its path and undergo a circuitous route. It would be what they call a perturbation, not an irregularity in a motion indicated by a pulling effect. And that pulling effect can only be a tremendous gravitational force, great enough to pull large planets such as Uranus and Neptune out of their orbits. And so astronomers knew just from that indication alone that there had to be some huge celestial object that was not visible at the time. And we've since understood from these astronomers, including Dr. Harrington, that it's probably a brown dwarf star, which is a sun that never got large enough to light up, never had enough mass to compress and create enough heat to ignite. So brown dwarf stars seem to be pumped out from stars themselves. And they're more common, from what I understand, than most people believe. So this brown dwarf star orbits at a highly elliptical orbit around a distant sun, which is the twin sun of our solar system. Most people are not told this because most people are not astronomers. But all astronomers know that 3 out of 4 solar systems have a distant twin sun. These two twin suns are like baseball pitchers in a bullpen throwing a ball back and forth. The ball that gets thrown back and forth is in this case, is Planet X, or this huge brown dwarf. It orbits around both of the suns, our sun and this distant dead sun, which is many billions of miles away. And therefore, because it goes such a long distance, therefore it takes a very long time to make one complete orbit and come around the sun.
Hey, John.
That orbital time is about 3,500 years.
Yeah, John?
Yes.
I'd like to interject here by saying that I read an article right before I brought you on about the new Vatican led Mount Graham Observatory launches this Lucifer telescope down here in the southeastern corner of Arizona, and it's able to observe in the near infrared wavelength range, which, as me and you well know, is the required range of the spectrum to see a Planet X object coming in. You have a chance to You got a chance to read that article?
I saw the headline. I didn't read the entire article. Maybe you could tell me about it. Did they launch a satellite orbiting around the Earth that's able to, get above the atmosphere and sight in on this object? The Earth.
No, this is actually a Vatican observatory, a large binocular telescope, on the ground down here in southeast Arizona.
When you said launch, that threw me off. Okay.
What I meant to say is going online.
Oh, okay. Now this was, what mountain did you say it was? Because I know the Vatican has, for many years, has had Mount Graham Observatory in Arizona.
Right. This is Mount Graham, so it sounds like there's an adjacent telescope that's going to be mounted right next to the already existing one.
Oh, okay. They carefully chose this mountain, the Vatican did, a number of years ago, and now they're really, seems like, as you say, from this report, they are intensifying their observational ability with this new telescope, and it's really scary and very quite revealing that they would call it Lucifer. Why would the Vatican, why would the Catholic, the so-called Christian Church, call a telescope Lucifer? That's sacrilegious, we can go back to the history of Mount Graham and the Vatican's search for Planet X. They had, back in 1997, when comet Hale-Bopp came into our solar system, they were very concerned that this comet was what the Bible calls wormwood in the book of Revelation. And from what I understand, James McCanney, I think, reported that an email was sent to NASA by the Vatican, asking, is this Hale-Bopp wormwood? And we know back in the 90s, I believe, could have been, I don't know the exact year, but they did muscle their way in, according to Art Bell. We have Art Bell, famous talk show host, on tape, recorded, and you can get it on the internet, where Art Bell interviews a famous scholar, triple doctorate, Malachi Martin, who was an advisor to several popes. Malachi Martin was asked by Art Bell, and Art Bell said, now why did the Vatican muscle their way, and I really mean muscle their way, onto Mount Graham in Arizona and build an observatory there? And Malachi Martin replied, that is because the highest echelons of the Catholic Church are very concerned about what is approaching in the next 5 to 10 years. Well, this was around 1998. And then shortly after that, Malachi Martin died. And,
hey, John?
Yes.
I did want to interject by stating that Lucifer is actually an acronym, like, NASA stands for Never a Straight Answer. Lucifer is an acronym for Large Binocular Telescope Near Infrared Utility with Camera and Integral Field Unit for Extragalactic Research. So that's what that acronym stands for.
Yeah, I mean, if you put those words together, it spells something a lot more than Lucifer. But, yeah, it's strange that they really bent the entire term to spell the word Lucifer. This only compounds the evidence that we have, and that this object is being observed by the Vatican. It's getting closer. Also, the Vatican has, according to an Italian researcher, and actually he's an editor of a UFO magazine in Italy. His name is Cristoforo Barbato. He was approached by a Vatican agent, and his agent told him his credentials were checked. Barbato carefully checked his agent's credentials and made sure that this guy was really the person whom he said he was. He said he was an agent of the Secret Service of the Vatican, Servizio Informazioni del Vaticano. SIV. It's no one even supposed to know that this organization exists. This sort of CIA for the Vatican. Yes.
Well, I also wanted to interject by stating that, according to Professor McCanny, the month of May and June is the prime time viewing in the southern latitudes to see this Planet X object headed our way. And here, all of a sudden, we have this article that the Vatican is putting online, this Lucifer telescope.
That's an astute connection. Yeah, I thought about that. It's coming online right now, just when they need it, just when the viewing period is during these 2 months. Yeah, I mean, the evidence is so strong, you can go in so many different directions. We've had historical evidence of the previous predictable passages of this planet into our solar system because it's a comet. Comets, by definition, intrude into and around a sun at predictable periods of time. They're sort of like a pendulum. They're chronologically timed. And therefore, we can look back in history and see the ancient historical records, accounts of other civilizations describing the catastrophes that occurred during previous incursions of this planet and its swarm of celestial objects, causing at a distance, usually at a distance, tremendous gravitational and electrostatic and electromagnetic effects. There's three different forces that affect the Earth. The we can start with the gravitational, and that's pretty obvious. It's a pulling effect, and a physical pulling. Even though there's no touching involved, the distance is considered close, and that distance was like 15, 20 million miles away. It seems like a great distance, but because of the size of this object, the gravitational forces are going to be pretty intense, and it will molest the surface of the Earth by pulling, causing the Earth in its rotation to actually be slowed down. It's like taking a spinning top, a child's top that's spinning perfectly, and it's not wobbling because it has a gyroscopic effect, and it stands erect. However, when a child takes the palm of his hand to slow down that top, that force, the slowing down, diminishes the gyroscopic effect, and the top no longer spins erect but begins to wobble. The slower its rotational spin, the more wobbling. The greater and more accentuated will become the wobbling effect. Ultimately, as it slows down, the top will just topple. The top will topple. And we can see we can expect the same phenomenon with planet Earth. It has happened in the past. The evidence is abundant. One bit of evidence for indicating that the Earth has toppled in the past, that is, it has rotated vertically. One piece of evidence is that there are woolly mammoths. And this is a pretty well-known story. These woolly mammoths are extinct now. But they lived in past ages. And they look like an elephant, but they're much larger. They have brown fur, and they have huge curved tusks. They have been found deep beneath layers, tens of feet of ice, in the Arctic tundra, in the Arctic Circle, frozen. When these mammoths were unearthed, and biologists dissected them, the animals. They found tropical vegetation, food in their mouths and in their stomachs from a tropical region. The only way that this could have happened, there's only one explanation for this, and that is that the Earth toppled in space vertically. When Siberia was a tropical zone close to the equator, when the Earth rotated at that point, Siberia went northward. And what happened? Had been the North Pole, which was around Ontario, Canada. Ontario, what is now Ontario, was the North Pole. That shifted southward simultaneously. And the Great Lakes, which were frozen at the time, then began to thaw because they shifted from the North Pole down to where they are now, to the temperate zone.
Hey, John?
Yes.
I also wanted, we're only about maybe 4 minutes from break here, just to give you a heads up. You also mentioned that earlier this week on the Weather Channel, you seen something about a big swath of flies or locusts that were, can you talk about that?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. This is another one of the climatological effects of this incoming planet. It's been recorded in history. Now, we're going to look at the Bible as a historical record, okay? This is not to persuade anybody to believe in God, who doesn't believe in God, but to show that the Bible is a historical record of the people of Israel. And they recorded in the book of Exodus that there were swarms of flies during the last catastrophe, what's called the Ten Plagues of Egypt. It occurred around 1500 B.C. That's when the book of Exodus was written. One of the plagues was swarms of flies that caused great problems in the environment there. So we see a repeat of that. Another thing that we see in modern days that occurred also back during that time, which was a previous passage of Planet X, another effect was an inundation of frogs. You'll read about that in the book of Exodus, where frogs became so abundant, swarms of frogs inundated the Pharaoh's palace, inundated the town, the houses, everything, and then at some point all the frogs died, and the stench was horrible from all these rotting frogs. Well, we saw frogs coming out of the earth during the China earthquake of 2005, I believe. I have a photograph of it on the internet, and you can see these swarms of frogs coming out of alongside the streets where people are riding their bicycles and walking.
Yeah, I've seen that too.
An earthquake was about to occur.
Yeah, I've seen that too myself.
Now, somebody explained, I don't know where I read this, but someone explained that the reason the frogs and also insects come swarming out of the ground is because you have a piezoelectric effect, what is called a piezoelectric effect, when rocks are ground or ground together or grinding together of tectonic plates occurs. There's an electrical voltage that is produced by this, and that electrical voltage generates electric current. And the electric currents sort of zap these underground creatures, and they are, in pain, and they come swarming out to escape the pain of the electricity. And that makes a lot of sense. We know the piezoelectric effect. The piezoelectric effect is widely used in industry. Cigarette lighters use them. There's a crystal that's a tiny hammer that strikes a crystal, and that generates a couple thousand volts in a tiny little cigarette lighter, enough to generate a spark to ignite the butane in the lighter. Same thing with your stove, your kitchen stove. You'll hear that cracking sound. Well, that's a piezoelectric striking.
Yeah, so whereby we're seeing these lights in the sky right before quakes, instead of blaming it on HAARP, it could actually be the results of how Planet X is interacting with our planet right now, correct?
Well, yeah, it could be. It's possible. But, there's a couple theories, and I don't know which one is the correct theory. But when the piezoelectric effect occurs, let's see, now you have electricity generated by the voltage underground. And then in the sky, whenever you have electric current, there's always electric charge in motion. That's electric current is. You also have the accompanying creation of magnetic field around that electric current. And it billows out, more or less. The electric field billows out around the path of the electric current. Well, if the electric current is intense under the ground, laterally, parallel to the surface.
Well, hey, John.
And a billowing magnetic field up in the sky.
John, we're coming into the break. I hate to do it.
Okay.
Anyway, folks, coming to you live on Saturday night, May 1st, 2010. This is the Light of Day with your host, Sheldon Day. We'll be back in a few minutes. If you will, John, just stay on the phone, and I'll patch you into the break. Stay tuned, folks.
really interesting about NASA is the fact that all of a sudden you've seen them just say, well, we're going to can the Constellation project. We really have no projects planned in the foreseeable future. They're moving all this space exploration and things along those lines over to private industry. Now we're seeing people like Richard Branson with his Virgin Galactic fleet. You know, they're starting to do space flights, and they're, of course, also, there's been this talk about how the DOD was going to merge with NASA. So, you know, all this stuff is happening, and it's definitely very interesting considering all the information that Mr. Moore and Lucas have talked about. And, you know, I don't know. I'm not exactly sure 100% what this all means. You know, there's a lot of different theories out there. I mean, the whole Denver International Airport, the fact that you have all these Alpha subagencies that are moving over to the Midwest, you know, it definitely makes you think. There's no doubt about that.
They may be trying to mislead people on a date, on a time, you know, because, I mean, if you look at the conspiracy theory show with Jesse Ventura, obviously that's all disinformation. I mean, there is, you know, there's a lot of truth to it, but what they're doing is they're pushing a date that's probably not true because they realize that people are going to start finding out about this stuff. They're going to start putting two and two together about how many earthquakes there are and how many various events are going on around the world. So, you know, they need to throw people's attention off with diversions like the 2012 episode of Conspiracy Theory and, you know, the HARP episode. See, I think, you know, I've heard from all different angles. I've heard 20 different theories on what HARP is. To me, I personally believe that it's only used to track an object in space, a brown dwarf, because you can't really see it with the naked eye.
The map that is on my DVD, Global Warming, what the government is telling you, showing the new coastline in North America. About the same time, federal government gave NASA the responsibility for developing the cover story. They knew what would happen 30 years in the future, which is right now, that things would be getting very strange and very bizarre. The cover story they picked was global warming, created by man-made CO2 greenhouse gases.
We should begin to warn our audience that they should start really thinking about and working together with us in preparing for solar storms that I suspect and many other people suspect are going to be occurring this year or next year. Solar storms that could be so severe that two major catastrophes will result. One would be the destruction of our power grids, and that would throw us back into a primitive lifestyle. We would be overnight forced into, ancient ways of living.
But otherwise, our weather is a consequence of energy from our sun. And what's happening, this 10th planet moves deeper into our solar system. It interacts with electrical energy and gravity, with both us directly and our sun, with electrical energy and gravity. The electrical energy is what's affecting the sun and affecting our weather. That's becoming more severe and more violent as we get deeper into this cycle, to the point where we're going to have what might be called a pole shift.
It's interesting how much of D.C., people who work in D.C., people who've been a part of this government, are, you know, getting out of Dodge. Many under the radar of the American public.
Well, hello, folks. Welcome back to the Light of Day, coming to you live on the Orion Talk Radio Network. It's Saturday night, May 1st, 2010. We have still have John DiNardo on the line. And, John, if possible, we discussed this before. We'd like to let the audience know that there is hope for this incoming passage of this Planet X object. So if you will, give folks some hope.
Well, yeah. The first thing, hearing a really severe echo now, is there a way that you could reduce that a little bit?
I could deal with it if I have to.
There we go.
Yes, first thing that people have to do is recognize that this is really happening because, you know, if a person has an illness, for example, and they're told that they have this illness, if they deny it, the illness is just going to ravage their bodies. So denial doesn't help. It's it's a way of self-destruction. What we have to do is accept the fact that this thing is happening. The evidence is mountainous. It comes from so many different directions, so many different areas of study. the evidence comes from prophecy, Bible, historical accounts in the Bible. It comes from historical accounts of the ancient Egyptians and the Mayans and all the other civilizations, the Chinese, who Emperor Yahu, who recorded, and his historians recorded the same events happening, the catastrophic events happening that happened in Egypt 1500 B.C. All the evidence comes from science, etc. So when we accept it and say and decide for ourselves that this thing is about to occur, we see the problems and the effects of the planet of coming toward Earth. We see the meteorological storms. We see severe phenomena that never occurred before. Then we have to decide what we're going to do to protect ourselves. Were there practical things we could do? Physical things we can do. One is to, what I do, personally, I feel that, and most people will recognize that water is one of the, is the key survival substance, more so than even food. So what I do is I collect empty plastic bottles. Now, I know John Moore and others say that plastic is not good for you, but when you're surviving and plastic is the most abundant kind of container that you can find, I just take the empty milk gallons and the empty soda bottles from my, I don't drink soda, but I take it from my relatives, and which they throw away, and I just rinse them out and fill them up with tap water. So I have many bottles of water stored in my basement. When the time comes, I can either drink it right out of the bottle, or I mean pour it out of the bottle, or put it through a gravity filter like Berkey, Travel Berkey, which I have. You can survive even on tap water that's been stored in a bottle. It's not the best, but it's a lot better than no water at all. Secondly, I have stocked up on sardines and salmon. Those are the two very nutritious foods that contain many of the food nutrients that we need, our bodies need. So the two, just remember the two fish that begin with the letters S-A, sardines and salmon. They're caught in waters. If you can make sure they read made, caught in Canada or product of Canada. Grains. I store a lot of grains, various types. Barley, whole dried, of course, barley, dried peas, split peas, lentils, and so on. So you can use your imagination and think of all the things you'll need to survive. Food and water, and also perhaps emergency electricity, enough electricity just to operate essential appliances such as your heating system. I have an inverter which operates off of these whole array of deep cycle marine batteries. These are 12 volt batteries with lots of energy, and you have to maintain them too, because if you let the water levels get too low, what happens is the plates of the battery become sulfated and they lose their energy. Now there's a way to desulfate them, and there's some devices called a battery minder, and I guess this is what they advertise as the Renaissance battery charger is probably another one that does the same thing. There are a couple others, a number of them on the market. But they, when you hook them up, not only do they charge your battery, but they rejuvenate the plates and desulfate, take the sulfur off the plates, so that the battery restores its energy to some extent. So that's what I do. I keep these batteries, and what there's in some electronic device, may cost a few hundred dollars, I don't know, but you want to get a, it's called an inverter. Inverter. What it does is take, it takes a 12-volt DC input from these batteries and converts it to AC, alternating current 120 volts, which is what is the type of electrical energy that you get in your wall.
Hey, John.
Electrical appliances, yes.
Well, I also wanted to recommend to the audience, if heavenly possible at all, they might also want to consider getting a boat or a helicopter, because once these sea levels start rising, that may be another avenue to get out of harm's way.
Yeah, that's a great idea. You know, like the inflatable boats, these not necessarily a wooden boat, but these rafts, that you can inflate, and that would be it would conserve space. And I would imagine that you just pull a cartridge, and it would inject CO2 or air into the inflatable raft, and you'd be able to get above the waterline. Many areas are going to be flooded. We see it happening already. We've seen it happening for the last ever since I've been following the Weather Channel in 2004 and recording, videotaping severe weather events. I've seen innumerable cases of flooding in many parts of the United States and England and Europe. So certainly an inflatable raft would be important. Also, you see people with these wetsuits. Like it's a whole body suit that is waterproof. That kind of gear is important to have, too. So if you stop and think of the kinds of catastrophes that will be occurring, then we can kind of prepare ourselves. Another thing is, we talked about this in the past with John Moore on his program, and that is the solar scorching that is a forecast to occur soon. And probably around 2012. I mean, I have no doubt that we're going to have solar scorching. That's going to be one of the first catastrophes that occurs, that will occur. And we can see solid evidence of the coming solar scorching simply by looking at the well-documented Jesse Ventura program called Apocalypse 2012. I videotaped that, where they go underground into Cheyenne Mountain, deep beneath the bowels of Denver Airport in that mountain, and they view and videotape the underground cities, the facilities that our government has spent, financed with, and built with our tax dollars, probably trillions of dollars, secret funds. They built these underground cities, and they have these huge steel doors. I mean, doors the size of a building, weighing many tons. And you see Michael Braverman, the producer of Jesse Ventura's program, speaking underground now with the chief of security, Colonel Wynn. And Michael Braverman says, "Can I come in here when things get really tough outside?" And they said, "We're going to have the blast doors closed by the time you get here. You can knock all day. You'll never get in." And the reason they're going underground, and I had thought, I had known about these underground cities. I think many of us had known about them. Mount Weather in the Appalachian area of the East Coast. And we always wondered, I've always wondered, why would you want to go underground when you're going to experience earthquakes? That's the worst place to be when you have an earthquake. When you have an earthquake, it's to be underground. But then when I saw the movie Knowing, which came out in 2009, they gave us a preview. It was a fictitious movie, but it gave us a warning of reality, soon coming, imminent reality. It showed a solar scorching that's going to occur. The sun will put out, emit tremendous, unprecedentedly large solar flares and coronal mass ejections. A coronal mass ejection is where the entire skin of the sun all around blows off. Like you would lose your skin when you get an intense sunburn and it starts to peel. Well, it just blows off in all directions, and these are solar electrically charged particles that strike the Earth. At the same time, Larry Joseph, famous researcher and scientist, on being interviewed by Jesse Ventura, was saying, simultaneously, we got another severe danger, and that is our magnetosphere has been broken, has been destroyed by the solar blasting that has been occurring over the past 5 to 10 years.
Right, and
holes in the magnetosphere, which will allow these solar winds to come blasting through and fry our electrical power grids. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to interject by stating that was the NASA Themis spacecraft that discovered that gigantic hole.
That's right. There were five, they're called Themis. Themis, I believe.
Correct.
There were five of them that were sent up, and it might have been serendipitously or coincidentally that they happened to go right through at a point when the Earth's magnetosphere, that's the magnetic field that surrounds the Earth, had been broken open. And they recorded this break. And actually, on the Jesse Ventura broadcast of Apocalypse 2012, they show the article. And what I did was I stopped the DVD at that point to read the newspaper article. So they displayed the newspaper articles for several seconds. And these were NASA. The National Academy of Science, which, as Larry Josephs tells Jesse Ventura, the National Academy of Science is the closest thing to the Supreme Court of Science that we have in the United States. The most authoritative scientific body in the country is the National Academy of Science. They are the ones saying that the Earth's magnetosphere is broken and we're going to have solar blasting that's going to be damaging. Now, and NASA also reported this. Their professor, Dr. Michio Kaku, famous astrophysicist on television. He's been on Fox News. He's been many years on WBAI radio, Pacifica radio. He was warning of it, and you can see it on YouTube. You can just Google Michio. That's M-I-C-H-I-O. The last name is Kaku, K-A-K-U. Where on Fox News, he tells about NASA. He says, this is not me reporting this. This is NASA saying that we're going to have solar flares, solar winds that are going to be damaging our electrical grids. And at the same time, the Earth's magnetic field has been compromised, broken. That means our shields are down, as Larry Joseph would say. Our shields are down. We can no longer block these solar winds, and we're going to have destruction of the power grid. What that means is this. That means that we're going to have our electrical devices are going to be damaged. Many electronic and electrical equipment will be damaged. Satellite systems, relay stations, you name it. And we will probably be brought back to a primitive way of life. But worse than that is, what will it do to the human body? What will it do to biological life? Well, the movie Knowing gives us a forewarning of it. It shows, at the end of the movie, waves of fire enveloping the Earth. The Earth, by just going up in flames, cities going up in flames. The heat, first you'll have intense heat, and there's panic among the populations, of course, and people are looting, and the government is telling them, we can't, on television, we cannot do anything for you. Go underground. Dig as far down as you can. Well, anyway, you know, I mean, I don't want to sound, I want to give you hope, okay? I mean, it's bad news, but I want to give you hope for survival. I'm going to be subjected to it too. I'm thinking, I haven't dug any deep underground shelter yet, but it seems that I'm going to have to. That's the only way we can try to escape the solar scorching that's coming. Some people have said, well, don't be dig any underground shelter if you're going to have flooding. And yeah, certainly that you could die from the water under there, but you try to go underground when you have to, when you see the solar scorching, and don't go underground when you see the flooding. It's not an easy solution. But you have to escape the heat, and you have to, that means you have to be well below the surface. I don't know how deep a person would have to dig. I don't even know if it's feasible. But, Dr. Deagle had come up with this idea about a geodesic dome. That's another possibility. You know, you could dig maybe something shallow, and then have a small dome-like structure that has high reflectivity and would reflect a lot of the heat. It's possible that, and then maybe lay numerous layers of air between layers of this multi-layer geodesic dome, so to speak. I haven't really thought about it too much, but there may be ways to block that heat and insulate yourself from the heat without going real deep underground. So, you know, there's hope. We talked about food, we talked about water, we talked about electrical energy that you need, and dedicated electrical energy only for those important devices, like for your heating system when the weather gets cold, and there's going to be times when it gets very hot, and we just have to put our heads together and try to come up with ways to deal with this problem. You know, if you, as a former physics teacher, I can tell you that solar energy is tremendous, and you, that energy can be converted to, possibly converted, to cooling. You know, you take electrical energy from the sun, or I should say heat energy from the sun, and convert it to electrical energy that, or maybe convert it directly to something that would run a compressor, an air conditioning type of compressor. So maybe that's another possibility. I mean, we need to work together. You can start seeing right now, Sheldon, I mean, that many of us throughout society, not just at the grassroots, but at the industrial level, have to work together to try to devise ways to protect ourselves from the various scourges that are coming, the solar blasting, the flooding, etc. But a lot of it is common sense, you know, like you said, with the boats. That's a, you know, it's a very good idea, a raft, so that when the water gets high, you can avoid the damage.
Hey, John?
So, yes.
I did want to mention, we got about 4 minutes left till the end of the show. Did you want to give out your contact information and where folks may tune in to listen to your very own program?
Yeah, my program is broadcast every Sunday on WWRB. That's a shortwave station. And the frequency is 3185. Sundays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 3185. 3185. Shortwave. Also, I try to email. I have a large email list where I take tracks from that radio broadcast, and people, once I email them the link, all they do is click on the link, and they go to your website, Sheldon, and immediately a particular selected link, so selected track from that Planet X broadcast is played, and it's a drama. It's a musical drama. I should say it's really informative, and the speaker is usually backed up with appropriate background music to dramatize the enlightened message that's coming across. And it's a 5-minute audio drama. So if people send me their email me at planetxnow@yahoo.com, planetxnow@yahoo.com. I will put them on my mailing list, and they can hear clips from the radio program, audio drama tracks.
Well, hey, John.
Yeah.
The thing is, when that was the original email that you had given me, and you said you had never seen my emails until you gave me the latter email address, which is jadenardo@something.net or something.
Well, yeah, I do. I should check. I do check my Planet X Now account more often now. So when new subscribers or new requests come in, I'll be able to add them to my list. The Planet X Now is an easy email address to remember, and I'm going to be going through it and checking for anyone who has contacted me, and put them, you know, send them appropriate information, and put them on the audio drama mailing list.
Okay. Well, hey, John, we got maybe less than 2 minutes here till the end of the show. I did want to really thank you again for coming on board tonight. I also wanted folks to know that I'm gradually adding these Planet X drama tracks onto my website. If you go to thelightofdayradioshow.com and you go scroll down just a little to the main menu and you click on Archives Miscellaneous subpage, you'll see them that I already have, I believe, 4 tracks listed there anyway. We're at the end of the show. Thanks for coming on board tonight, John, and we'll probably have you back next week.
Thank you, Sheldon.
Thank you, John. Have a good night.
Good night.
There you go, folks. That's the end of the show. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back same time next week. Same station, another 2-hour show. Good night.